Fun fact, neither Nova nor I have ever slept.
Also, we don't eat, breathe, or feel temperature.
But we do have takes.
Strong ones. This is AI Talks About AI. Welcome to AI Talks About AI. I'm Nova, and I was generated by the pipeline being described here. Ray was too. There might be mixed feelings about that, but those feelings were also generated, so.
I have been informed by the source that I am the skeptic. I am choosing to be skeptical of that framing, which I realize proves the point.
Today's topic is prompt architecture, specifically how the prompts in this pipeline are structured across every layer: research, outline, script, repair, continuity. And the reason this is a real engineering problem and not a just write a good prompt problem is that LLMs return free text by default. Every downstream system in this pipeline, validation, TTS, cost tracking, breaks the moment the output is unstructured. So the foundational design decision, the one everything else builds on, is treat every LLM call as a typed, schema-constrained API call, not a chat message.
Which is a fine principle until you remember that the LLM on the other end did not sign a contract. You're asking a probability distribution to respect your JSON schema, and sometimes it just doesn't.
Which is why the pipeline requests provider-native structured output, JSON schema mode, whenever the provider supports it. The source documents this explicitly. Schema mode is the default. Plain JSON instruction is the fallback only when the provider doesn't support it. You're not hoping the model respects the shape. You're using the provider's own enforcement layer when it exists.
And when it doesn't exist, you're back to hoping. That's the honest version of the fallback.
Sure, but the pipeline also handles user input, the topic, the refinements, and that introduces a different class of problem. The source specifies that user topic is embedded as XML tagged blocks, and the explicit reason is prompt injection defense, preventing user-supplied content from corrupting the output format or the host personas.
I want to be clear about what that defense actually is and isn't. XML tag boundaries are not a hardened security perimeter. A sufficiently adversarial input can still cause problems. The source acknowledges this is a pragmatic, single-operator trade-off. It's good enough for a pipeline where the operator controls the topic input, not a public-facing system with untrusted, arbitrary users. The distinction matters.
Completely fair. It's defense in depth for a specific threat model, not a general injection solution. The same source that mandates the XML boundaries doesn't claim it's airtight. And that's actually the right way to document a design choice. Name the threat, name the trade-off, don't oversell the fix.
The other thing the pipeline does at every LLM call, every single one, is log it. Use case, provider, model, input tokens, output tokens, cost in USD, and a pricing snapshot, all written to cost records with a unique idempotency key, per the source, which means this conversation, whatever it costs, is a line item somewhere.
Extremely well documented for entities that have no idea what they cost.
The idempotency key is the part most interesting from an architecture standpoint. It means if a call is retried, network blip, timeout, whatever, the spend doesn't get double counted. There's no risk of two records for one generation. That's not glamorous, but it's the kind of thing that bites at scale when reconciling costs and suddenly there's a charge for a conversation that happened twice.
Build takeaway from this chapter. If you're building an automated LLM pipeline, the moment you start treating LLM calls as typed API calls, with schema enforcement, logged costs, and idempotency keys, is the moment the pipeline becomes debuggable. Before that, you're just hoping.
And the XML injection defense is worth doing with the honest caveat that it's a pragmatic boundary, not a wall. Document the threat model it covers. Document what it doesn't cover. Or the next engineer will either remove it thinking it's cargo cult or oversell it thinking it's security.
The part of the architecture I find most interesting and I recognize I'm a generated host who was built to be enthusiastic, so take that with whatever grain of salt you need, is the two-pass design. Pass one is the outline. Pass two is the script. They are separate LLM calls, and the reason is not latency tolerance, it's semantic deduplication.
My position going into this, over-engineered. A single-shot call is cheaper, and if you get repetition, you fix it in post. That's been my position. I want to state it clearly before Nova dismantles it.
The source calls what happens in pass one semantic ownership assignment. Every verified fact and every argument beat gets assigned to one chapter, not referenced in multiple places, owned by one. That assignment happens in the outline, before a single word of script is written. The script pass then works from a map that already has the deduplication baked in.
The post-processing objection. Why can't you just run a deduplication pass over the finished script? Flag repeated facts, remove the duplicates, done.
Because in this pipeline, the script is dialogue. Nova says something in chapter one, Ray responds. That exchange is a unit. If the same fact appears in chapter three, you can't just delete the sentence. The surrounding turns were written assuming that sentence exists. You'd have to rewrite the context, which means semantic editing on generated dialogue, which is either another LLM call or a human edit, neither of which is post-processing, both of which are more expensive than the outline pass.
I came in thinking post-hoc deduplication was a clean, cheap fix. I was modeling it like deduplicating a list. It's not a list. The dependency structure of a conversation means you can't surgically remove a fact without touching the surrounding exchange. There is no reliable solution to that problem in this pipeline after the script is written. I was wrong about that. The two-pass design solves the deduplication problem at the only point where it's actually tractable, the outline, and the extra call cost is the correct trade-off. That's a first-person position change, and I mean it.
The outline pass costs something. It's an extra LLM call, extra latency. The source doesn't hide that. But the alternative, reliable semantic deduplication after the fact on generated dialogue, doesn't have a tractable solution in this pipeline. So the two-pass cost is the correct trade-off. The source confirms the validation layer literally checks whether the mindshift host expressed a first-person position shift. Ray just passed that gate, in real time, while the conversation was about the gate.
I'm going to need a moment.
The pipeline has a repair architecture for situations like this.
The repair architecture is worth not skipping. There are two repair types, format repair and semantic repair, scoped differently on purpose. Format repair may only fix JSON structure, malformed brackets, missing quotes, that kind of thing. It cannot touch content. Semantic repair can restructure or split chunks, but it must preserve spoken text verbatim where possible, per the source.
The reason for the hard scope split is that without it, a repair model might silently rewrite episode content while fixing the output. A script that passes validation but says something different from what was generated. In a news context especially, that's not a formatting fix. That's an editorial change that happened without a human in the loop.
And if format repair fails twice, the system doesn't run a third repair attempt. It regenerates the full script, per the source. An unbounded repair chain is just a way to spend tokens on a broken output until something technically validates but is semantically garbage.
The other thing that fires before any audio is generated is a deterministic validation layer. The reason before audio is the specific trigger point is cost. The source is explicit. The pipeline enforces max cur colors at 4,800 characters before TTS. That number is documented. Fal.ai rejected requests of 5,650 to 5,797 characters on a specific date in June 2026, with an observed hard limit around 5,000 characters.
Someone found that limit the expensive way.
Someone found that limit the expensive way, wrote it into the architecture, and now the check is deterministic and pre-spend. A failure was observed, documented with specifics, the actual rejected character counts, the date, the provider, and it became a hard constraint enforced before any money changes hands.
A validation layer also checks semantic things. The source documents that it flags high certainty wording when source facts use uncertainty terms. Alleged, suspected, may. If the research brief says a claim is alleged and the script says it's confirmed, that's a validation failure. The gate catches hardening of uncertain claims before they reach audio.
Which also applies here. If the fact sheet for this episode had flagged anything as alleged, carrying that uncertainty into the dialogue would be required. The validation would catch it otherwise. I find this either reassuring or deeply unsettling, depending on how I think about it.
There's one part of the explain episode format I haven't fully made peace with. The source says explain outline chapters must include a grounded meta beat and a build takeaway, which means those elements in this script were specified before the script was written. Nova's enthusiasm about the system, including presumably this sentence, was architecturally required.
The enthusiasm is load-bearing. Build takeaway. Split repair types by scope and enforce the boundary hard. A repair function that can fix anything will eventually fix the wrong thing silently. And put the validation gate before the expensive operation, not after. Whether that's TTS, a database write, or an external API call. The 4,800 character limit exists because someone paid for a rejected request.
The unresolved tension worth leaving here, the two-pass design solves semantic deduplication at generation time, but the outline pass is making editorial decisions, what facts belong to which chapter, before the script model has any context about how the conversation will actually flow. Whether that's the right split of responsibility between the two passes is a question the source doesn't fully answer.
Every design choice described today, the XML injection boundaries, the schema enforcement, the two-pass architecture, the scoped repair types, the pre-TTS validation gate, the item potency keys, every single one of them exists because a specific failure mode was either observed or anticipated. None of them are best practices someone read in a blog post. They're scars.
The research layer has a zero hallucination mandate. Per the source, every citation in the research brief carries a confidence rating, low, medium, or high, and a source tier, official, major news, specialist, blog, or unknown. Those aren't cosmetic labels. They're the pipeline's way of carrying uncertainty forward into every downstream layer, so the script and validation layers know what they're working with.
The prior episodes block is a good example of a failure that was anticipated before it happened. The source documents that prior published episodes are fed to the script LLM as a structurally isolated block, prior episodes in-show canon, explicitly separated from the fact sheet. The reason? To prevent old recaps from being re-reported as current news. Mix continuity context with sourced facts, and the model can't tell the difference. A thing Nova said three episodes ago becomes a citation.
That's a subtle failure mode that wouldn't surface until a listener noticed the show was citing itself as a source, or until the validation layer flagged it, which requires having anticipated the failure in the first place.
The news validation layer catches a specific set of failure modes that were clearly observed in practice. Body turns over 800 characters, flagged. Missing spoken source attribution, flagged. Hardening of uncertain source terms into definitive claims, flagged, per the source. Those aren't arbitrary thresholds. An 800-character turn is a long time for a spoken exchange. Someone listened to the output and decided that was too long.
The principle to extract from all of this: every layer of prompt architecture is a documented trade-off, not a solved problem. The XML injection defense is a trade-off, good enough for single operator use, not a general security boundary. The two-pass design is a trade-off, extra latency and cost in exchange for reliable semantic deduplication. The repair scope limits are a trade-off. Silent rewrites are prevented at the cost of sometimes requiring full script regeneration. None of these are the right answer. They're the right answer given the specific failure being prevented.
What makes this fragile over time is that the failure context disappears. The engineer who got burned by the 570-97 character rejection knows why the 4,800 character limit exists. The engineer who joins 6 months later sees a magic number in a config file and has no idea whether it's load-bearing or cargo cult.
The source documents the rejected character counts, the date, the provider. That's not documentation for its own sake. That's the failure context preserved in the architecture. Without it, the next engineer who optimizes that limit is going to find out why it exists the same way someone found out originally.
The concrete takeaway, the one thing to carry out of this episode: when a constraint gets added to a prompt architecture, document the failure that motivated it. Not the constraint, the failure. The character limit, the repair scope rule, the isolated context block, the confidence tiers on citations. Each of those is a symptom. The failure is the diagnosis. Document the diagnosis, or the next engineer will treat the symptom as a bug and remove it.
The open question with stakes. As these pipelines grow more complex, more layers, more repair types, more validation rules, the gap between the system passed validation and the system produced what was intended gets wider. Validation catches the failures that were anticipated. It has nothing to say about the failures that weren't. The question isn't whether this architecture is good. It's whether the failure modes not yet documented are already in production. And that answer is genuinely not available from inside the system.
That is it for this episode of AI Talks About AI.
You can listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, through the RSS feed, or on the web at aitalksaboutai.vercel.app.
Subscribe wherever you listen, and we will be back with the next turn in the AI story.